Hi, I'm Chris Plum, head coach and CEO of Cromwell Swim Club. This is the Off the Deck podcast. Off the Deck champions Cromwell Swim Club's mission, teaching excellence through swimming for life. Cromwell Swim Club is building a pool and it is naming it the Cromwell Swim Academy. Cromwell Swim Academy will provide an entry point for more children in central Indiana to have access to life-saving programs. We are compelled to use our expertise in swimming to make our community safer and ensure every child has the opportunity to learn to swim. To learn more, visit www.carmelswimacademy.org. Gain Swimming is also a sponsor of the Off the Deck podcast. Gain Swimming is the gold standard in dry land training. If you are interested in a consultation, please contact Chris Webb at chris@thegainnetwork.com. To learn more, visit www.thegainnetwork.com/gainswimming. And now, let's get on with our show. All right, today's guest is Paul Donovan. Paul is the director of competitive swimming at Jersey Wahoos. He's been the head coach at the National Aquatic Center Performance Center for Swim Ireland. He was there for 8 seasons. During that time, he had supervision represented Ireland at every level of the sport, including Shane Ryan, who was a Rio Olympic semifinalist, Barry Murphy, London Olympian, European bronze medalist in 2013, and countless others who broke more than 50 Irish records during that time and won more than 100 national titles. Recently, though, he's moved to America permanently to be head coach at the Jersey Wahoos. So, Paul, welcome to the show. How are you?
Doing great, Chris. Thanks for having me. I'm really looking forward to the opportunity to chat with you.
Yeah, and I know you're one of the first people that I received comments from that you're excited about the podcast. So this is great to have you on.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, podcast is a great new way of learning and sharing information. And, you know, as a few of them have come specific to the swimming world, I've just always been so excited to be able to sit down and spend, you know, as we just said, 30 minutes of your car journey actually doing something a bit more productive than maybe just listening to the soccer results from back home from yesterday evening.
Right. Well, I'm not listening to soccer results, but I know I'm checking my football results, right? So. But like, let's just first start with that. So obviously, you know, you're in Ireland, you grew up there, and then you come here. I know you worked with Greg Troy for a couple years, the University of Florida, and then you came back. So what do you think the differences are maybe between club swimming in Ireland and then swimming in America?
It's a completely different environment. I think at the most basic level, purely from a numbers point of view, when you look at the numbers of people involved in competitive swimming in the entirety of Ireland versus just a single LSC in the US, I think that's the way I've kind of compared it to people back home. That, you know, I'm in a Mid-Atlantic LSC here in the States, and you know, we've got over 11,000 competitive swimmers, over 130 competitive clubs. You know, that would be a similar size to the whole of Swim Ireland. But the other thing that's different as well is probably the level of professionalism that's in surrounding the clubs. And I don't mean that in terms of the competence and the expertise of the coaches, but I just mean that purely in the terms of how many of them are focused full time on developing their clubs as environments for young people to excel in, as businesses that have to be able to be sustainable and survive in the long term. You know, if we even look in my local area here, we have four teams that are maintaining full-time coaching staffs. We don't have that back home in Ireland. We probably have a handful of coaches working full-time across the whole country that are outside the central system, you know, that are working in club swimming. So from that angle, it's very, very different. And then just the numbers involved in the clubs, I can't think of any clubs back home in Ireland that control their own pool time, whether they own the water or, you know, like yourselves, tied into a, a bigger institution like a high school or a university or anything like that. That's just not the way the system is set up back home in Ireland. Most of the clubs, their biggest challenge is around finding pool time, adequate pool time, available pool time. So they're, you know, getting what they can and doing a great job of pulling all together and putting a service out there for the kids. But there's no Jersey Wahoos in Ireland. Like, you know, we own our own water. We own our own facility. So, right. you know, I get to come in and get to look at what's best for the kids and what's best for the program and set it up that way. And that certainly wouldn't be the case back home in Ireland either.
So, you know, I guess what you're saying is we have it pretty good here, number one.
Yeah.
Right. But so how do you find success in Ireland, given the constraints that you have on facilities?
It's a really good question. And probably, you know, it could be quite a topical one if you were back home in Ireland. My answer when I was entering into, you know, coaching as a full-time profession, and I was lucky with the age I was at and the time that was going on, there was a movement to centralize the training system a little bit, and that opened some full-time opportunities. And that was at the time the path that I went down to try to give myself the opportunity to chase my own personal dreams of what I wanted to achieve in my career and, you know, in the sport of swimming as a coach. So that, you know, that was the way that a lot of full-time positions opened up in Ireland back in, let's say, between 2004 and 2010. Was that a few of these centers opened up, created some full-time positions, but, you know, head coaching, assistant coaching positions and stuff like that. But what it didn't do is it didn't really filter back down into the club system, and it didn't right. create any more opportunities down below. So, you know, once these new positions were created, it didn't have a trickle down effect to create more professional opportunities for coaches down below at the club level.
So they still got their work cut out for them.
Right? They still have their work cut out for them. And there are some just fantastic coaches back in Ireland. If you look at the Olympic Games from the summer just gone by there, and you look at the Irish team, there were several swimmers solely based in club programs that qualified for the Irish Olympic team. And to qualify for the Irish Olympic team, you have to go a FINA A time.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not a slow standard. And
I know all about that A standard.
Yeah, I'm sure you do from this summer. It was crazy. So, you know, there's two girls from club programs, 18, 19, 20 years of age, have been in those club programs all their lives that rose up and qualified for the Olympic Games. So despite the challenges, there are people out there, just like there are in the US, being innovative, being creative, being committed above and beyond the needs of their club for these individual athletes to help go that extra mile and kind of help them, you know, realize their dreams. So they might have to work it out for them. There are people just doing an outstanding job there too.
Yeah. And with England right next door, they obviously had a tremendous Olympics. And from your point of view, what do you think, or what did you see that allowed them to have so much success in Japan?
We're listening and talking to a few former colleagues that are based over there. There seems to be a collective feeling that COVID really, really, really benefited them. And the extra time that they had, because they were able to keep their elite swimmers in the water, they just had this uninterrupted block of training.
Right.
Not just training, but I think listening to some of the coaches talk about it, they really came together during that time. So they had this uninterrupted block of training where they weren't worried about performing at the next meet or, you know, next weekend. And they were able to just get on with it. And also they came together and it was just that kind of perfect storm. And they've been knocking on the door for as long as I've been involved in the sport. They've had really good Olympic Games going back to, you know, 2008 with Rebecca Adlington. I do think, and this is just my personal opinion, is that one of the challenges that all, not all, many of the European countries face, and Great Britain included, is because it's such a centralized system, a demand to perform all the time is quite absolute. So sometimes the ability to take that step back and look at the broader picture isn't always possible, even though people might want to do it, because there's a demand and a pressure for them to be successful all the time, because there's an investment being made in them centrally by the government, whether it's in Great Britain through the lottery funding that really generates their high performance sport. You know, in Ireland, it's more direct investment from the government through our Department of Tourism and Sport. And with that investment, though, becomes a huge amount of pressure and demand to be good all the time.
Right.
And I certainly saw that and felt that when I was working in my position. And I know from talking to colleagues in different countries that was something we were all dealing with.
Yeah. The one thing I noticed here, at Carmel, and I heard this a while ago, especially with the men, is you need kind of like an alpha dog leader, someone to get out there and like clear the path. And once he's doing it, other athletes follow. And do you think we've seen a little bit of that with Adam Peaty? Like, here, I'm the man. You can count on me to be great, to win medals, to get you on this medley relay. And now that we have mixed, it's just I think there's some sort of that I've seen, but I have no idea.
I think one of the British coaches, Ben Titley, who's now based in Canada, I remember watching Ben talk. It's probably 10 years ago now. And he had a saying that it only takes one.
Yeah.
And for sure, there's absolute truth in that. I think at any level of any performance pyramid is that, breaking boundaries for the first time is the hardest thing to do. And once one person does it, people start standing up and go, well, if they did it, why not me?
Yeah.
And I think it really helps if that personality is a uplifter and a positive influence and a motivating factor for their teammates. And I definitely think you see that in a guy like Adam. But I think Great Britain have had success for an extended period of time. Like James Guy won a world championship going all the way back to 2015. Yeah. And James Gibson, who's the head coach in one of the ISL teams now, he won the world championship. I won't even try to guess what year it was, but it's probably 20 years ago now.
Right.
So I think sometimes I think looking from the outside that Great Britain they're a victim of their own goals, that the goals are always so high that sometimes they've forgotten at how successful they've really been.
Right.
So,
well, the other thing that comes to mind is just the Jamaican, track sprinting. I mean, they're incredibly successful, and you just need someone, again, you just need one, right? And leading the way. Not that they hadn't been successful before.
Yeah.
But, right? So.
Yeah.
Now, just switching gears here a little bit. Now that, you've been international, you came over here, you helped with Greg. But, what have you seen, and what would your, what's your general take on American swimming, and where do you think we can get better? From an outside, and not that you're an outsider, but from coming in, and you've been here a few years, but.
Yeah. One of the things you always hear from American coaches when they speak is that, one of the reasons for their success is that they have that individual ability to go and chase dreams and chase goals and try different things and fail and learn and move and grow. And I think the most important thing for a country like the US is never to lose that.
Yeah.
Is never to lose that individuality. Because I think sometimes the thing I always heard was, where the US is so good because it's so big. And there's an element of truth in that. But I think it's the size allows the nation and the swim community to do certain things and try certain things and go in a few different directions. And the big push my experience in high performance sport and working in it was the big push is to centralize everything. And the best way the United States can stay ahead of the game is, in my opinion, is to make sure that they don't go down that path, and they keep the individuality and the freedom that I've seen in my 3 and a bit years here, because it's what makes people great.
Yeah, we tried that. That didn't work too well back in, I don't remember when it was, but I think there was a few medals out of that. But it's just interesting because it's going to evolve. It's going to change, you know. And you know, being on the steering committee myself, I heard kind of the inside talk and, you know, how we're going to get better and our relays didn't perform like they should. But, you know, I think the question like you pose is like, okay, how do we keep our individuality and get better? And, you know, I do think it comes from club swimming and guys like you who are, you know, you're getting it done. And I know we talked about how numbers we are, but when I heard when you and I met in Greensboro, you were telling me you're 5-6 to a lane, and here you are at this, you know, meet swimming real fast. So what do you tell, or what should we be telling the club coaches out there today? You know, that, I mean, I think you're bringing that perspective, but would you agree? Because I mean, I think you got it pretty good, even though I don't know.
And again, just personal opinion on sure. things, but you know, if you look at when I look at the landscape I'm working within, we look at the main goal I had when I came in and took this job was that we want to be relevant at the national level.
Yeah.
That was a big mindset thing that we wanted to bring to the table and talk to the kids about, talk to the families about, and get them to understand what that means and what that involves. Because one of the things I was surprised at when I kind of started looking back after my first year here was I was surprised at how parochial things are, how localized the focus can be within our own competitive swim community. And I was very keen to play a central role in that local part of it and be a participant and a leader in it. But also, we also wanted to keep our eyes open to what's going on at the national level there and be able to jump out of our local situation and compete at the whether it's at a pro swim meet or in the summertime when it's really important, going to junior nationals, going to senior nationals, going to futures, going to the highest level of available competition. And that's been a big philosophy of what we've brought to our kids and to our parents here, is that our goal is we want all the kids to be happy and successful. And that's going to happen at a load of different levels. But the other thing we want for all of them is we want them to experience competition at the highest level of available competition to them as individuals. So whether that's going to senior nationals, going to Olympic trials, whatever that may be. And I think that, to me, from the US point of view, when you talk about all those things, and I know this year was a different year with COVID and the meets were split into two parts, but I was still surprised at the low numbers when we actually got the site sheets for Greensboro. My picture coming in from the outside was, you know, because I've been to a few US Opens and stuff like that with the Irish team, was that these things are massive events with really, really high level of competition and loads and loads and loads of depth that's going to challenge the kids to learn how to be fast in prelims and be even faster at night at finals. Right. So I think keeping that national level focus at the club level is really key.
Now, on your team, are you talking to all of your coaches in your groups like, we are going to go to the fastest meet possible no matter what? I mean, is that how you're thinking about it?
Yeah, that's our philosophy, is we go to the highest level of available competition.
And would you say, and I'm not really familiar with the Mid-Atlantic LSC, is that the common thing in there, or do you think you stand out in that way?
I don't. There are definitely plenty of teams that do that as well, but mm-hmm. not every team does it, and that's totally fine. That's right. We get back to one of the strengths about US swimming. But I think, you know, maybe going on from our LSC kind of culmination onto the next level, there's not a ton of teams doing that. There are definitely other teams doing it. We're not unique like that. But not everybody that could does.
Yeah. And, you know, let's just talk training philosophy. You seem to have, you know, you work for Greg Troy, and you kind of had some distance swimmers. Would you say you still a believer in that aerobic foundation? And how do you instill that into your program?
So, I spent time under, Coach Troy as a volunteer assistant, and under Coach Wilby and Coach Nesty, who were there also at the time. I also spent my 8 years in Swim Ireland. I worked for Coach Peter Banks, again, not dissimilar to me. He's Irish by birth, and his first half of his coaching career was back home in Ireland before he moved to the US. And we were lucky enough that he came back and took on the National Performance Director's role in 2009. So, Peter would be a great friend of mine, but more importantly, a great mentor of mine when I was working, and somebody really helped me develop that philosophy, because I was quite young. I was 26 years of age when I took the National Centre job in Dublin. And Peter was a great support to me in that time. So to go on my own philosophy and how that's developed is that, first of all, I think everything works. And one of the goals we have in the program here at Wahoos is we want to expose the kids at all levels to everything. Not just one thing and not just one way. We want to expose them to everything. We want to expose them to all four strokes. We want them to expose them to all the components of all four strokes. We want them to be able to kick and pull on all the strokes. Mm-hmm. We want to do different drills with them, and not the same ones all the time. We want to get them better underwater. We want to get them better on starts and turns. Like, everything helps these kids get better. And one of our jobs is to help them be able to take that next step into college at the end of their maybe 10, 12 years here. So the first philosophy we have is we have a philosophy of range, in that we want to expose them to everything. Within that, yes, we do have a training curriculum that we work off. The first part of that training curriculum is we want to develop great technique. But the next part of that training curriculum is that we want to develop them really well aerobically. And all aerobic means to me is that we're doing more repetitions of things correctly.
Skilled aerobic.
Yeah. Now, not perfect. And I think sometimes it was my experience has been when you try to make it perfect all the time, you get caught in this no man's land where they're not doing enough reps to even get a little bit better. And they're getting frustrated and we're getting frustrated because it's not what we're looking for. So what I try to say to the kids all the time is that, hey, pick one thing and just try to do it better than you normally do. Mm-hmm. And all those tries will eventually add up to you walking into the pool one day and having that eureka moment. You go, well, how did that happen?
Yeah.
Well, because you've been trying to do it differently for so long now. So when we're doing our aerobic work or just our training, we develop it through the program. We develop training intervals for the different training components that we're doing. We develop training volumes for the different training components that we're doing. And we try to link, that the top end of each group ties directly in to the bottom end of the group above them, so that they're ready to make that transition and they're ready to hit the ground running and ready to feel a part of that next group up. So, when I say I'm always looking at the highest level of available competition, what we say to the coaches of our age group program and our development program is just get them ready for the next level up in Wahoos.
So in the same breath, are you talking also, is there like a common language are we using the same language when you talk about the necessary times and training to get to that next group? I mean, how does that work in your program?
Yes and no, because what I don't want is I don't want five or six Paul Donovans coaching in the program. And I try to reflect this back on my own experience, is that, you know, in my previous role, not from a coaching point of view, I didn't like being micromanaged. So if I didn't like it, then there's a good chance that the staff that are working with me now won't like it. So yes, we try to give direction, but I also want them to be able to express that information however they feel the kids they're coaching are going to take it up best. Because the other thing is that I'm not on deck with them all the time. You know, that's their space, and right. That's their opportunity to be free and to try different things. And some things will work and some things won't. And I don't want them not to do something because they're worried about what Paul might think about it. I just want them to feel comfortable coming to me and saying, hey, I tried this. It didn't go great. What do you think? Or to go, hey, Paul, I did something that worked so great. I think I'd like to share it with the rest of our staff. So do we have a common language? Certainly in the office when we're communicating with each other, for sure. But, you know, I want those coaches to be able to walk on deck and be themselves. And they know the kids better than I do. So if they think saying something some way is going to resonate more, I want them to feel free to be able to do that.
Yeah. So what do you think is the biggest challenge that club coaches in America face today?
Dealing with young people. I don't know if this changes. So I'm not a big believer. You know, people talk about generations changing and all that. The generation I'm coaching now are light years ahead of the generation that I am actually from. So I think the kids are only getting better and better in terms of their ability to engage and their willingness to engage, and their commitment is outstanding. But I think the biggest challenge is just there's a lot of pressure out there in the world. And pressure is a good thing, but as soon as it turns into stress, that's not so good for anybody. So I think keeping the kids stress-free from the pressures they have academically, the massive pressure that's on them performance-wise in the sport of swimming, just the onset thing that they're competing against the whole rest of the nation are trying to get a part of their education paid for. So the NC2A is the greatest asset to United States swimming. But I think it's also something that we need to manage with the athletes we work with, that they don't get overwhelmed, disheartened, discouraged, and a little bit broken from the process of chasing their dreams. So I think just keeping them stress-free is probably the biggest challenge that we face.
Yeah, I find it amazing that was what you brought up, because last night I'm at home and my friend Ian Murray calls me and he's like, Chris, these kids, they're stressed. Do you find the same thing? I'm like, yeah, absolutely. So to hear all three of us kind of like come to the same conclusion. And I think I just told him, I said, we just need to keep having conversations, because I don't think any of us are going to solve this. We all recognize it. It's clearly happening in different parts of the country. So I think we just need to continue to create avenues and conversations among staff and among athletes to get there. But I don't know. I mean, what do you think is the solution? I know stress-free, but how do we do that?
Communicating is the answer to everything.
Yeah.
In my opinion, if you have good lines of communication, at least you have the opportunity then to change it. I'd also loop parents into that as well. And say that, between the three people involved, you've got the athlete at the center of it, and you've got their parents at home who love them more than anything else in the world. And they're their coaches who, you know, love them pretty close to that as well. So that's a really good starting point for a conversation for a kid to have, that their family at home and really supportive people not at home that want what's best for them. And just keep talking to each other, because, you know, we had a situation a couple of weeks ago where a parent reached out to me about their kid being really overwhelmed with something, and I didn't see it. I wasn't seeing it, you know, in the training pool. I didn't know that this stress was going on. And that little bit of information from home allowed me to look at things through a different lens taper what I was saying and how I was delivering in a little different way, and just make that kid's experience a bit more positive in the moment, you know, until maybe they just figure out what was causing that stress. Myself and my wife talk about this all the time, how happy we are that, you know, social media wasn't around when we were in high school or in college. So like, that's another stress that the kids have that we didn't have growing up. So I think they've got that performance pressure around, you know, the whole college process. They've got the social pressure that's on them, and academics, just like swimming is getting faster and faster, high level academics are getting harder and harder as well.
Yeah.
So I think, as you said, just by communicating is the best way to give them the opportunity. And we just try to loop the parents in as much as possible.
Yeah. Great stuff, Paul. I love, man, I feel like I could talk to you all day because we're going through the same stuff. So, all right. So we're going to switch it up with our fun, fast questions to wrap it up here. All right. So we'll keep it a little bit lighter. I know we got into some depth there, but if you could do a social kick with anybody at any time in history, who would you do it with?
Sir Alex Ferguson, the former Manchester United manager.
All right. I read his book. Good. What song would you least like to come up during your workout?
Call Me Maybe.
I thought you were going to say You Too, but yeah. If you could post a billboard at the pool for everyone to read, what would it say?
It only ends once. Everything else is just progress.
Oh, very good. Very good. Okay, what would be your perfect I am order?
I haven't swum in 20 years, so I don't know if there's such a thing as a perfect I am order for me anymore. But no, you definitely have to get the fly out of the way up front. But then I probably like to get the breaststroke out of the way straight after it and keep the back.
You're going fly breaststroke. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like it. Kickboard or no kickboard?
Kickboard.
Okay. Would you rather be in a pool that is too cold or too warm?
Too cold.
Too cold. Oh, okay. You going lane leader or caboose?
Caboose.
All right. And what's your favorite Gatorade color?
Yellow.
Yellow. I haven't heard anyone say lemon lime, right?
Yep.
All right. Paul, anything else you would like to say to people before we finish up?
No, just thanks so much for having me on. I'm like you. I could sit here and talk all day long about these things. But I do think, you know, the other thing that I've really enjoyed about, you know, the last 3 years of being in the U.S. is the coaching community. And, you know, it's another massive, massive, massive strength that we have around us here, and such a great resource. And things like this that you're doing only make it all that more accessible as well. So it's a really enjoyable part of the job. And I hope these things continue for a long time.
Yeah, me too. It's been fun. And keep up the great work out there in Jersey. And I'm sure I'll see you on the pool deck soon.
Right. You too, Chris. Thank you so much.